listening to the John Barrett Leadership Podcast, where you'll hear great ideas, insight, and inspiration to level up your leadership ability.
Hey, everybody, it is John Barrett on the John Barrett Leadership Podcast. Once again, it is so good to be with you, to add value to you, so we can level you up so you don't level out in your influence and your impact. Guys, today I am so excited to talk to you. I want to talk to you about the optimistic advantage. This is what great leaders always see, the optimistic advantage. Now, before we jump into this month's content and talk about this very, very important skill, I want you to know that I am rooting for you this year. I am behind you. I am excited for your leadership journey. This can be the year that you can make a massive difference, that you can grow yourself, that you can do all the things that you've ever wanted to do so that you can become as successful as you've ever been. It is within your grasp. It is within your reach, and I want to help you do that. Now, few things real quick. I would love to add value to you. I know you're listening to this podcast, but if you go to johnbarrettleadership.com, you can find out all my resources. I've got all kinds of tips. I've got YouTube videos. I've got books. I've got a article that comes out every Tuesday morning that you can subscribe to. There is so much leadership content over there to help you level up so that you can be your best. And I would love to add value to you this year and just help you get to where you want to be as a leader. Okay, let's talk about the optimistic advantage. This is what great leaders always see. Now listen, what separates really good leaders from great leaders? Now, there are a lot of things. We could obviously attribute all kinds of things to that and all kinds of skills. But one that I want to focus on today is this. It's not strategy. It's not systems. And it's certainly not just solving problems. As important as all of those things are, here is the optimistic advantage. It's about perspective. Now, great leaders possess what I call the optimistic advantage, the ability to see what others overlook. This is what separates great leaders. Listen, guys, I've been working with leaders for 25 plus years in every industry you can think of, nationally, internationally, and I'm telling you, this idea of the optimistic advantage, I've never seen a truly great leader that had tremendous influence, tremendous impact, huge respect, and was able just to get the best of everyone around them. I've never seen one that is pessimistic. I just haven't. I'm maybe they're out there, but I've not come across them. All the great leaders that I've ever seen, they are incredibly optimistic. Now, I can tell you this. All the people that I've seen struggle, all the people that I've seen at every level in leadership, whether it's the lowest level, the highest level of leadership positionally, here's what I found. Those that struggle are those that tend to be a little pessimistic. Now, I want you to know that being optimistic is not just a bonus. It's not just a cute thing. It's not just some trite little thing that we're talking about that sounds good. This is huge. This is what can separate really good leaders from great leaders. It's their ability to see what others don't see. When everyone else is pessimistic, when everyone else sees all the problems, when everybody else sees everything that's going wrong and all those things, a great leader has to have the ability to see possibility. And if you don't have the ability to see possibility, then you're going to limit yourself, you're going to limit those around you, and ultimately you're going to limit the impact of your organization, whatever it is that you're leading. You have to be able to see it. Listen, the most wealthy people that I've ever known, they see money everywhere. And here's what I mean by that. They look at everything as an opportunity. They're just phenomenal. They have an abundance mindset that there is all kinds of money and opportunity out there. And because of that belief, they just tend to go after it. But you know what? Those that struggle financially are those that have a scarcity mindset, the belief that there's a short supply, that there's no way I'm going to be able to get into that. And so they're always running around frantic. They don't see opportunity because they don't have the belief. Now listen, you are either going to have a scarcity or an abundance mentality. Scarcity is a very pessimistic mentality. It's a very pessimistic mindset. The belief that there's a short supply and that you've got to kind of get out there and take it and, you know, get lucky or something like that. But abundance mindset, those that operate from the highest level of success, which is an abundance mindset, it's the belief that there's more than enough, that there's always an opportunity, there's always a way. I can remember when I was young, my parents, kind of struggled in school, in elementary school and that, not really because I didn't understand it all. I just didn't care. I had so many other interests, right? Basketball and G.I. Joes and all the things that I wanted to do as a young kid. And my parents, I remember them getting this tape series. They ordered this VHS series in the mail where there's a will, there's an A. And it was taken from that statement, where there's a will, there's a way. If you have the will to do it, you'll find a way to do it. Well, it was called Where There's a Will, There's an A. And it was the idea that if you will just apply yourself to learn and see possibility, then you can kind of soar into this A, kind of average and with your academics and do really good. And I can't tell you that that really changed my life a whole lot, but, you know, I think I still struggled through school focusing on what I wanted to focus on and what others wanted me to focus on. But here's what I do know is that that stuck out to me. Even as a young kid, that saying, where there's a will, there's an A. And I really believe that that idea was kind of implanted in me. I remember sitting down and watching this teacher on these VHS tapes. My parents forced me to do it, but I remember watching it. And I remember this guy just kept talking about this idea that you can do this, that anybody, that it's a level playing field. And if you have a growth mindset, you can get in there. Now, this was back in the 80s, okay? So I'm dating myself here, but this was a long time ago that happened. This was pre, you know, Angela Duckworth and, you know, Grit and all the Carol Dweck and mindset and all these things. I mean, this was like the OG kind of mindset stuff right here. But I'm so grateful for it because I truly believe that that was just one piece to the puzzle in my life that gave me an abundance outlook. But I want to challenge you. Do you have an abundance outlook? The idea that where there's a will, there's a way. That you can create opportunity. You can make it happen. You don't just have to wait for market conditions and be reactive and be a product of your environment. No. Have the optimism. Have the perspective that there is an abundance mindset. And I'm just telling you that the greatest leaders, the most successful, influential people out there that I know at least, are optimistic people. They have an optimistic advantage that sets them apart from everybody else because they see opportunity where everybody else sees problems. They see an opportunity where everybody else sees obstacles. Now, I love to do this. In live audiences, I love to do this kind of illustration, and I'm a visual guy, so I usually have a whiteboard or a flip chart with me every time I speak, and I love to draw and just kind of, you know, put things on paper or on the whiteboard just to kind of show what I'm talking about. But what I'll do is I'll take this big flip chart and this giant flip chart, and I'll take this black marker, and I'll just draw a dot on the paper there, and it's not real big, okay? Just a little dot on there, and I'll look at everybody and say, what do you see? Now, everybody obviously responds with, we see a black dot on this piece of paper. We see a black dot. And I say, isn't this interesting that what everybody sees is just one black dot? Nobody ever says, well, I see 99% of open white canvas space where you could draw anything and all that. They just kind of see the black dot. That's what sticks out to them. And yet the black dot is just a little circle on this paper. It only represents maybe 1% of the space here. And all this negative space where there's nothing is 99%. It's opportunity. It's just you can do anything you want with it. But nobody ever says that. Now, I use this illustration because I say that's what the law of negativity does. When one thing goes wrong, when there's a black dot on us or what we've done or the project or the season that we're in or the quarter that we're in, whatever it is, you know, maybe we said something and there's kind of a black dot or somebody said something, we tend to just focus on that like it's everything. Like it's the entire paper. I mean, that's all we can see is that black dot. And even though 9 things out of 10 went amazing, that one thing that went wrong, that one mistake that you made, that one thing that, you know, where somebody said something about it and they critiqued it and it was really hard. It was that one thing. And what does it do? It consumes you. And you get so fixated on that one thing. That little black dot. And that's exactly how negativity works. 9 out of 10 things go right, but 1 out of 10 goes wrong, and we focus on that. Now, this is important because if you're not careful as a leader, you will spend all your time looking at the black dots. Now, I'm not suggesting that you ignore black dots. We have to fix mistakes. We have to take problems that we've got in front of us and figure out how to make them right. But here's the thing. If you're not careful, this is what I've seen in 25 years of coaching with organizations. I do a lot of consulting, business consulting for organizations. And one of the things that I'll talk about is that where every organization goes by default, unless they intentionally work against this. Your meetings, everything that you do will be nothing but fixing problems. That's it. That's it. You will just focus on everything that you've got to make better, that you've got to improve, that you've got to fix, every mistake, all those things. And listen, all of that is vitally important. You've got to do all those things. But if you're not careful, you will get out of balance and you will get hyper fixated on that. Every meeting will go to negativity. Every meeting will just start off with problem after problem after problem after issue after issue. And if you don't intentionally fight against that with being optimistic as a leader, if you don't inject some life and energy and something positive into this equation, your team will just get to a point where all they feel like they're doing is fixing problems. And when your team gets to a point where all they're doing is fixing problems and they're never focusing on what's working and what's winning and the good things that happen, your team will start to feel like they're losing, because it just feels demoralizing when it feels like you can never get ahead, you're never winning, you're never doing it right, you're just always focused on what went wrong. And you know this to be true. You're in a team meeting and something really great happened, but what do we talk about? We don't spend time celebrating and talking about all the great things and, you know, Jim, great job over here, and you know, so-and-so, you did a great job, so-and-so, you did so amazing and all that. No, what do we tend to do? We pass by that really quick. If we do it at all, which most teams don't, but even if you do like a good news check-in or you do some sort of kickoff where it's kind of positive in your meeting and you say, hey, great job last week or great job on this event or this project, I just thought it went so fantastic. But what do we tend to do if we're not careful? We pass by that super fast and then we jump into, but some things that we need to look at, some things we got to do better next time, some things that we got to fix. And again, all this is vitally important. But if we're not careful, we'll spend about 5% in celebrating and about 95% critiquing and just ripping at the shreds, talking about what we need to do better. Now, I'm not saying that 95% of it doesn't need to be fixed, right? Maybe it does. But we've just got to be careful. And as a leader, you've got to be really careful, because what you tend to just talk about and focus on is what your team will come to just value. It's what they'll come to just be fixated on as well. So if all you are is just looking at problems and talking about that from a very pessimistic standpoint, your team is going to follow that model. But if you're one that's going to inject life and energy and wins when you're winning and talk about it, then all of a sudden you model this. Listen, the law of negativity is like the blob. I remember when I was a young kid, my dad had me sit down and watch, like, I don't know, like the 1950s movie. I don't know what year it came out, but it was really old. And it was the blob, right, where this little kind of silly putty looking stuff just kept growing and growing, and it was eating the town, and it was just, you know, it got to be monstrous. And I remember being terrified of silly putty after that. I mean, I thought that thing was going to eat me alive. And to this day, I still, you know, maybe a little frightened by it, a little therapeutic for me. But this idea of the blob, that's what negativity is like. Negativity is like the blob. It just keeps consuming everything in its path. And if we allow those black dots on the paper to dominate our thinking, then they're going to expand. They're going to overtake our joy, our energy, our engagement. They're going to overtake all the good things that are going on. So we have to shift from being a problem fixer to a possibility seeker. Now, let me say that again. You've got to shift as a leader from just being a problem fixer to a possibility seeker. You've got to be optimistic. You're not just solving a problem. You are creating possibilities. You are creating opportunities, and you've got to focus on that. I know it's kind of semantics. Yes, you're fixing problems, but the focus isn't the problem. The focus is on the solution. It's on the possibility. It's on the great things that you're going to do to overcome this thing. So even when you have challenges and you've got problems that you're fixing, are you kind of approaching them and communicating around them about the opportunity and the potential within that? Because every problem, every obstacle has an opportunity. Every problem has some sort of opportunity in it to do something great. And you have to understand that your ability as a leader to control that narrative and to get people's eyes not on the black dots, but on the possibilities, on all the things that we could do, that white space on that piece of paper, then that is going to set you apart. And this isn't just mumbo jumbo. I'm not just talking about, you know, tritely kind of saying all these, you know, optimistic things. I'm talking about truly being someone that is a possibility seeker. Now, Charles Schwab, you know the name, Charles Schwab. But what you don't know maybe about him is this. He was the first American executive to earn over $1 million salary. Okay, so this is the first guy to earn over $1 million in the corporate world as a salary to be paid. Okay, and this is what he said. This is fascinating. He said, "I consider my ability to arouse enthusiasm among my people the greatest asset I possess." He considered his ability to arouse enthusiasm among his people the greatest asset that he possessed. Think about that. That's the guy who was the first one to make $1 million. And he understood the optimistic advantage. He understood that if he could arouse enthusiasm and focus on opportunity, focus on solutions, focus on what was working and winning and how to make things great that way, that all of a sudden, he said, that was the greatest asset that I could possess, is the ability to do that. Now, when I would ask you, what is one of your greatest assets that you have as a leader? Most of us probably wouldn't say that, right? We would say, oh, it's my ability to get things done. It's my ability to make things happen. It's my ability to focus and just, you know, eliminate distractions or whatever it is. And those are good. But would you say in one of your assets is the ability to arouse enthusiasm among your people and your team and your organization? The volunteers that you lead, or the team that you've got, the department, or if you're the leader of the entire organization, is that one of your greatest assets? And if it isn't, I'm just telling you that you need to grow in this area. And like any skill, in anything that we've got, we need to grow it. We need to become great at it. You don't just get there. Optimistic advantage isn't just, for some. It isn't just for optimistic people and people that were born with a really good disposition. This is a skill that we've got to all develop. You can develop the skill to be optimistic. You can do it. There is a way in which you can do this, a practical way that you can practice it, that you can do that. In fact, I'm going to give you some ways here that you can practice this and some things that you can do that is going to help you become more optimistic. And it's like a muscle. The more you use it, the more that you work it out, the stronger it's going to get. And so you may not be very optimistic right now. I get that. Maybe you're more of a pessimistic person. Maybe you can call yourself a realist, right? Which is just a pessimist in disguise. But, you know, you just say, I'm a realist, right? That was a little poke at you. I'm just having fun with you here. But if you would say, I'm not really an optimistic type of person, then I would just challenge you and say, listen, you can't just settle for that and say, well, that's just who I am. No, that's going to limit your ability to influence and impact others. I'm telling you, if you want to grow as a leader, you got to grow the optimistic advantage. You got to grow in your optimism. So how do you do that? Let's kind of unpack some thoughts here of how you can do this. Now, there is so many ways, and there are books out there. I think one's called The Happiness. Advantage. I can't remember. There's a book out there. There's all kinds of books, and there's lots of research done lately, especially over the last 10 years. Just about the power of happiness, optimism. And Simon Sinek, the famous author of Start With Why and, you know, considered a world-renowned leader and voice in the leadership world. I mean, he has a whole organization designed towards optimism and the optimistic kind of leader and how important that is. And so, again, this isn't something new. This isn't something that's just a cute little thing in the corner. This is something that the leadership community understands and recognizes, and we're talking about it. So even if you're not optimistic, you can grow in it, and we're going to help you do that. If you are optimistic and you're kind of bent that way a little bit already, in fact, most of you probably are to some degree, then what I want to challenge you is, how can you amplify that? How can you just go to the next level? How can your best become better? And how do you get even more optimistic? Because the more optimistic you can get, truly, genuinely, not just, you know, saying statements and you know, lying and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about true optimism, that you really believe it and that you seek opportunity and that you see things in a different way than others, then you're going to begin to grow your influence and impact, as I said. So here's just five thoughts that I want to give you, just five thoughts, not limited to. I'm sure you could come up with a lot. We could probably sit down and come up with 30 more, but I just want to give you five thoughts that kind of quickly came to my mind. Is this, as a leader, when you're always dealing with problems and correcting things, whether it be issues, processes, maybe even people at times, where you've got to offer that corrective feedback, like we talk about, the guardrails, accountability, encouragement, and correction. You've got to offer some correction to people. Listen, you've got to balance correction with celebration. You've got to have a balance of this. Correction and encouragement have to be balanced and celebrating. Listen, when you're addressing issues, follow them up with wins, things that are winning, things that are going good. For every problem discussed in a meeting, challenge yourself to name at least one success story that you can talk about. I mean, it keeps morale high, keeps the energy moving forward. So don't forget to celebrate the wins, the encouraging things. Talk about the white space. Make sure that you do it. Even when you're dealing with a big problem or you're correcting something that needs to be fixed, even when you're doing that, focus on the opportunity. When I'm meeting one-on-one with people and I'm giving them feedback as a leader and I've got to correct them and bring some hard truth, that whole time, guess what I'm doing? I'm building them up. I'm being constructive. I'm saying, listen, I know this is hard. I know this is something that we've got to talk through. But listen, I believe that you can do it. I believe that if you can overcome this, that you're going to be great. You're going to grow in your influence. You're going to grow in your respect with other people on our team. I'm telling you, you can do this. You can become incredible. But we've got to fix this issue. We've got to talk about this attitude, or we got to talk about this unwillingness to do X. You get the point. But I'm always speaking to what could be. As a leader, you got to balance correction with celebration or correction with encouragement, right? You've got to bring those and you got to balance it strong. Second thing I want you to think about is this: exploit strengths, don't just fix weaknesses. Now, you've heard me talk a lot about this when it comes to your strength zone and the strength zone circle. If you've not listened to that, you need to go back and listen to that. That's so vital. But listen, don't always spend time trying to fix all the weaknesses in your organization and people. Focus on your strengths. I'm not saying that you don't have to make sure that you've got your bases covered with your weaknesses. I get it. But listen, great leaders don't just patch holes. They build on strengths. So don't overlook what's already working well. Amplify it, optimize it, multiply it. Figure out the strengths on your team and get people to focus and double down on those. As an organization, quit trying to fix all your weak areas all the time and think about where are you great at that you could double down on. I call it the Babe Ruth effect, right? The whole idea that when Babe Ruth, the year that he had the record for most home runs, okay, most home runs, the Bambino slugger, that is the same year he also broke another record that most people don't know and don't talk about. He also broke the record for the most strikeouts any individual had ever had. So the same year that he broke the record for home runs, he also broke the record for most strikeouts. Now, do people talk about his strikeouts? No, nobody remembers him as that. They remember him as the Bambino slugger. They remember him as the home run hitter, Babe Ruth. I mean, the name that will go down in history. Why? Because he focused on his strengths. I mean, he would swing, and when he would swing, he'd swing for the fence. And if he missed, he missed royally. So nobody remembers his weaknesses. They remember his strengths. Imagine if he would have said, man, I better focus on my weaknesses. I'm striking out all the time. I just better play it safe. I better shore that up. No, he just kept doubling down on his strength. And that was when he hit that ball, he hit that ball. So I just want you to focus on strengths, exploit strengths. Don't just spend time fixing weaknesses all the time, whether it's within people, whether it's your organization, whatever it may be. Third thing I want you to think about is this: keep perspective. Listen, you've got to have good perspective on problems. Problems always look bigger than what they actually are when you're too close to them. I mean, if you put that right up against your nose, your problem, it's just going to be huge. You can't see around it. You can't see anything because it's right up in your grill. So just by backing away 3 or 4 feet, guess what? Now you have perspective. You can see around it. You can see other opportunity. So many times we are so close to the problem and we're just so inundated with it that we haven't just kind of breathed, taken time to rest, stop back or pull back a little bit and just say, okay, let me get perspective on the problem. And listen, perspective is what sets you apart as a leader. So you have to understand that you got to back up sometimes. You got to look away. Don't be so emotionally invested in this. And I know that's easier said than done, but be careful, because when you get emotionally wrapped up in a problem, you can't see perspective, the right perspective. You can't see straight. You're all tangled up. You're all kind of, you know, messed up in there. So you got to back away. Do whatever you got to do, whether that's just breathe, take a walk, take a break, whatever you've got to do, get some perspective from somebody else and say, help me look at this differently, because right now I'm not in the right headspace. You've got to change your perspective. And when you change your perspective, you're going to change the solution and the opportunities around you, okay? Fourth thing I want you to think about is this: speak life into your team. Speak life. Your words have power. They have the power to construct, or they have the power to destruct, right? You can be destructive in your words or constructive in your words. You can build people up or you can tear them down real easily, and sometimes unintentionally. So your words are very powerful. If you're going to be abundantly optimistic and you're going to have this optimistic advantage, be someone that every time you get on a call with your team, you pass them in the hallway, you see them at the retreat, wherever you're at, you speak life, you speak encouragement, you build them up again and again and again. Listen, Charles Schwab, remember I talked about him being the guy that first one to get $1 million salary. And he said, hey, my greatest asset was to arouse enthusiasm in others. He also said this, I love this. He said, the way to develop the best in a person is by appreciation and encouragement. Now that's so simple, but it's powerful. The way to develop the best in another person is by appreciation and encouragement. So don't underestimate the power of just verbal affirmation. You've got to speak over your team and be a very optimistic speaker and build people up. I'm telling you, as a leader, the more you build people up, the more they're going to build. The more you build them up, the more they're going to be able to build, because their tank is going to be full. There's wind in their sails. They're going to be able to go out. They're going to be able to make a difference. They're going to do everything that they know that they can do. Now, fifth thought I want you to think about is this. Be a hope-giving leader. Napoleon Bonaparte said that a leader is a dealer of hope. Listen, in tough times, hope is always the greatest leadership advantage that you can have. I mean, I'm telling you, it awakens something within us when there's hope. When there's hope for the future, there's power in the present. I mean, when you have hope for the future, you got power in the present. When you don't have hope for the future, guess what you don't have in the present? Power to change, to do anything. You are just, you're tank is empty, you're out of gas, you just don't know what you need to do and all that kind of stuff. Listen, you have to understand that being a hope-giving leader, in fact, I wrote a little book on this. It's available. It's out there floating around. It's literally just a little one. I wrote it during COVID. And it was the whole idea of you've got to be a hope-giving leader through all this stuff. And people are looking for you as a leader to give hope. So I want to challenge you, be a hope-giving leader. Winston Churchill, when he was asked, how did you go against this Nazi regime and just this horrificness that was going on? How did you do this? Winston Churchill said this. He said, hope was our greatest weapon. Now that is powerful. I mean, Churchill was a phenomenal leader, but hope was our greatest weapon. And he knew that in order to go against the Nazi regime, they had to have the hope that they could do it. If they lost hope, which they quickly were doing, and it was very easy to do, that if they lost hope, they would lose their greatest weapon. Their greatest weapon wasn't their artillery. It wasn't all these things. It was hope. And I love that, because I think as a leader understands that hope is one of your greatest weapons. And when you don't have hope, all of a sudden now everybody begins to lose that edge. Everyone, the productivity goes down, morale goes down. I'm telling you, the output goes down. You know this to be true. When you're feeling low and down and discouraged, do you want to go out and do a bunch of great things? Do you want to go work out? Do you want to go, you know, make phone calls and connect with people? No, you want to go hide away in the corner. I mean, that's what discouragement does. But encouragement, the ability to put courage inside of somebody, encourage, E-N-N, put it in the root word courage. When you encourage yourself or others, you're putting courage into them. That's when you want to go make the phone call. That's when you want to sit down and get things done. That's when you want to jump into that meeting and say, let's find out solutions. So you got to understand productivity and the success of your organization is literally directly related to how optimistic your organization is. And then I would even drill that down further and say, how optimistic are the leaders in the organization? And listen, you've got to set the tone. You are the model. You are the example. If you will begin to work on your optimistic muscle, you are going to have an optimistic advantage. And the optimistic advantage will set you apart, not just as a leader for yourself, but it'll set you apart as an organization, as a team. You will literally be more productive, more successful in everything that you do. I'm telling you, this is vital. So I want to challenge you, work the optimistic muscle. Practice these things and anything else that you can think of. I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff that you picked up over the years where you can learn how to do it. So whether or not you're optimistic now, or you're going to be, or you already are, we all need to get better and grow in this. Guys, I am so rooting for you this year to be optimistic, to be a great leader, to have influence and impact. You are incredible. Thanks for listening to this month's Leadership Podcast. We will see you next month with another episode, my friend.
Thanks for listening to the John Barrett Leadership Podcast. To get more of John's resources, visit www.johnbarrettleadership.com.